Welcome back, everyone, to a convenient parallel discussion. We are joined once again by author James Green Jr., author of A Convenient Parallel Dimension, as well as the Moogly fan club, that is Eric Christensen, and several members of the Buffalo Ghostbusters. Let's get right into this. So this chapters 9 and 10, we're actually almost already at the end, guys. But so chapters 9 and 10, we're going to cover still a bit of the back and forth Ghostbusters 3 and some of those scripts. So who's got a note? Get us started.
I will say something. If this book teaches us anything, it is the fact that studios put a lot of time and effort into trying to make movies happen, and not everything works out all the time. A lot of times they seem like they put the cart before the horse, and it just doesn't pan out. DC is like a prime example of all the projects they announced, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, and a fair bit of them didn't work out. Case in point, they've been trying to make Ghostbusters 3 for 30 plus years. You know, finally got it with Afterlife, but look at all the attempts that they've tried and just didn't work.
And so many of us, every time we're following it online and getting our hopes up and thinking that this was the time that the movie was really going to happen.
It's going to happen this time. I just know it. I got a feeling.
Does anybody else still feel that way when they see Ghostbusters news? I still always have like a twinge in the back of my head that I'm like, no, it's going to get canceled. Obviously, the Eisenberg-Stupnitsky script is such an interesting one. I remember being really excited when they got announced. They were announced before year one came out, which altered my excitement level. They did so many of the great episodes of The Office. I mean, Dinner Party alone, anytime that one's on, I stop and watch that every single time. But
snip snap. So,
snip snap, snip snap, snip snap. I think they're so good at that farcical mockumentary humor that obviously you can't necessarily translate that into Ghostbusters, but I think that's why maybe year one wasn't a success. You know, they tried to alter their writing style and do something different. I don't know. I think they were so good in The Office that I remember being so excited about that.
I knew nothing about those guys, like, at all. I've never seen year one. I've never watched any of the, the Dinner Party episode of The Office.
How have you not seen that episode?
You're missing out. You're missing out.
I've only ever watched like season one of The Office.
And that's the worst season.
I've heard it was the worst season. I know, but it's on Peacock, I believe. So
yes, it is.
I have to admit, I've seen like two or three episodes, and that's it. Sorry.
I know. I will admit, I don't remember the Dinner Party episode. I'll have to go back and rewatch it.
Oh, okay.
But another thing that goes along with that Ghostbusters 3 is Judd Apatow was signed.
Right? Okay. I wasn't the only one that had buzz on that. So, James, Judd Apatow was officially, he signed a contract at some point?
That's what was reported in several reputable trade magazines. And, I had Judd Apatow as one of the many people I reached out to for this book who did not respond to me. and, you know, it was one of those things, I think, I feel like it's kind of been tough to confirm exactly like how, you know, obviously that didn't happen and everything kind of unraveled, but I don't know. I think some people have said like you should double check on that because it's unclear, you know, that another example of the cart before the horse. Sometimes, you know, these trade magazines, you know, print stuff that isn't necessarily, totally factual, or, you know, sure, they'll present rumors as factual. But as far as I know, like he was signed and then, you know, it didn't happen, but it's like that happens so often with so many projects, you know. Just today I was looking up, I don't know if you guys remember this or if you're familiar with this at all, but in 2011, Ben Stiller's production company was going to make a movie starring Bill Hader about Von Meter, who was the JFK impressionist whose career completely ended at when JFK got assassinated, and he had like a horrible struggle after that, and it was like, you know, all these huge talents were like signed to it and it just evaporated. You know?
Oh no, and I don't remember hearing about that one.
That happens, you know, like every day in Hollywood. So
well, yeah. Yeah, very much put the cart before the horse, and they're getting ducks in a row, and they don't even know where the row is headed.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we were just talking about it before everybody came in about like Gambit and the X-Men and things like that. I mean, Channing Tatum being Gambit, that was announced back in what, like 2014, 2015, and then it just never happened.
Yeah.
There was a Justice League movie too. They had everybody cast from Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, and it just kind of disappeared. That was the
George Miller version, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That one.
Yeah, they had. I think they were like getting ready to go before cameras, and then whatever happened, it just crumbled.
Or like the Nicolas Cage Superman.
Well, at least we got to see that eventually.
Yeah.
Well, I loved the comparisons of. I mean, they're. Well talked about, but the comparisons of the Frat Pack, you know, Vince Vaughn, Paul Rudd, all those guys that were doing sort of these, their comedic style was pretty clearly influenced by the Reitmans and the Aykroyds and the Ramises. And I still remember, and it circles back to the Judd Apatow thing, but I still remember a bit of a viral Photoshop that somebody did right after the 40-Year-Old Virgin. And it was of the four guys when they were at the speed dating scene, and somebody photoshopped them into all Ghostbusters uniforms and was like, here's your new dream cast. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, all right. I like, at that point it was just like, give me anything Ghostbusters.
And one out of four actually was true.
Right? Paul Rudd. Yes.
Yep.
How about it? After 20 some years.
Even now, I would love to see Seth Rogen as a Ghostbuster.
Yeah, I think he'd be a good like tech guy, similar to Eddie in the last video game.
I'd love to see that if he was playing sort of similar to his role in Superbad. If he was more like, you know, he was a dumb cop in that, but not just sort of this typical stoner. If he was sort of just a regular. What if guy.
They took the approach that they were going to do with Chris Farley, making like the bumbling nephew of Ray Stantz.
Exactly. Well,
and I believe at the one point, I think it was Amy Pascal, may have even said for this latest script or whatever, not latest, but latest in terms of where we're discussing, it was either the Eisenberg Stupnitsky or the Ethan Coen one that had like Ray's nephew or son.
It was his son, yeah.
And I think she may have even said Seth Rogen would be great for this role. I think that I might be butchering the line of thought here.
Seth Rogen was already the son of a Ghostbuster in another movie.
So. I was just about to say, if you've seen Knocked Up, when him and Harold are talking to each other, it's fantastic. I could definitely see them being related.
James, you actually mentioned that scene in Seth Rogen and Harold in the book.
Yeah. And I don't remember if I mentioned it all, like Seth Rogen talked about how like when they were shooting that, Harold Ramis came by his apartment and he's like, I wasn't living in a very great place at the time. But he came in and like was just hanging out at my place. It was really trippy, you know.
That was not in the book from what I remember, but we just got a free extra tidbit, special feature.
Well, you guys tune in.
Interview at some point that he was just like, yeah, he just kind of walked in and we just talked for a really long time. You know.
But okay, when the aspect came up about Murray obviously saying Venkman needed to be a ghost, and then Sigourney was talking about like, oh, there's going to be an interaction between Bill as a ghost and Oscar. Did anybody else just like get struck with a chord of afterlife there. And I'm just like, oh, look, that little aspect idea eventually still kind of survived in another way through other writers, all of that. And I'm sure they're not even connected, but it was just funny to me to be like, oh, Venkman as a ghost, you know, talking to Oscar.
I thought the same thing.
I did Phoebe as well. Kelly. Yeah. And then I loved the reporter asking Murray, like, oh, well, you're going to be a ghost. Isn't that too similar to Zombieland? And I loved Murray being genuinely confused. Just like, we kind of expect Bill to be joking and not necessarily take this material all that seriously because he's a comedian and it's Ghostbusters and all that. But I loved that he was like, well, that was a zombie, not a ghost. Like, don't you know the difference?
I thought that was very entertaining.
That was
really weird too, because it's like in Zombieland, he's obviously a zombie, but like he's a human disguised as a zombie.
Well, right, yeah.
I didn't understand how that question even came about. It's like, but wait a minute, like he's just like he's still a human.
And you might be doing a too deep of a dive here.
I totally just didn't understand that whole question that was asked of him. And so his confusion kind of like was with my confusion on that whole thing. I was like, what is going on here?
But how about the Spike Awards? Everybody remember like that breaking the internet, Murray showing up in uniform to accept his award for Zombieland?
Yeah, like, and his comment was just like, this is, don't read too much into this.
He's like, it's just for fun. I'm just having fun. I still remember websites pulling that photo. I want to even say as late as Afterlife, where they're like, it's a set photo. It's Murray in uniform. It's like, oh my God, there's a podium in front of him. Like,
and he had a proton pack on.
I mean,
yes, he did.
I'm sure it was probably one of the foam ones.
Yeah, I hope it was.
No, it was a fans pack. There was a whole thing where somebody was like, we were invited to this event. This was my pack that they used.
But, I mean, just going through all those casting rumors, too, and seeing just all of the names that were considered or auditioned or, you know, I guess nothing ever referenced auditions, but were just, like, considered, talked to, negotiated with, like, Emma Stone, Jonah Hill, Charlie Day, Jesse Eisenberg, Seth Rogen, Anne Hathaway was a surprise to me. I don't remember ever hearing that.
I've never heard Anne Hathaway. I remember Eliza Dushku being a big one.
Yeah. For sure.
God, it was.
Always, I remember her name, but like just rereading this was just like, oh yeah, I forgot all of this additional Ghostbusters 3 stuff was coming about in the 2010 era.
I'll say one name that jumped out at me that I would love to see in a Ghostbusters movie is Aziz Ansari. I think his style of comedy would be hilarious in dealing with seeing ghosts or whatever. Well, I would like to see him even as just like,
what would you cast a cameo, as like a Next Generation Peck or something? Or
no, I could see him so many different types. He could be a Lewis Tully. I could see him as a Ghostbuster. I could see him just as like hotel manager, like dealing with, you know, the Ghostbusters coming to bust a ghost.
I absolutely loved his cameo in This Is the End, where he just got to play silly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a favorite movie of mine.
One thing that, you know, I was thinking about during this whole chapter was how much back and forth Ivan Reitman had with directing the movie and then not directing the movie and then seeing what he wanted to do with it. I was like, I always thought that he was just going to direct the third film with the the two writers. He was going to be the director, and I didn't know that he was going back and forth that much.
Well, and it seems the studio was too, in terms of wanting him or not wanting him and all that. It was so much back and forth and I think that again speaks to the rumors that we were hearing and feeling like it was so close, especially like after the video game. Once that was a hit, and then any rumor felt like, okay, they know that the property is still marketable. They know it's still popular. Like, they're going to finally do it. And then everything it would get there and then it wouldn't get there. And then you would hear Murray said yes, and then Murray would be like, no, I didn't.
It was just the script, or did you not read the script?
Right. Like, we still don't know if that whole thing is true. Aykroyd says there's no way that Murray ever shredded the script. And Murray still kind of hints that he did sometimes, I think just for fun. But I genuinely hope he would first.
James, you know, in your research through this whole thing for the whole book, how close, in your opinion, do you think we were to that Ghostbusters 3? Like, in a percentage or whatever.
Well, in a percentage, that's tough because, you know, in terms of the script by the office writers, you know, eventually one of them said, you know, it was Murray who killed it, his inaction. So I think it's like, you could say it was, even if it was like 99% going to happen, like, you know, at that time they still had that legal agreement where they all had to sign off on it. And if Murray's not doing anything, you know, that wipes it away. But it's also sort of like, I feel that Bill Murray probably wasn't as like, you know, he eventually said like, yeah, I read the script and it wasn't good. I didn't like it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's probably, I imagine if you're Bill Murray, Ghostbusters is something you have to hear about every day of your life, whether you want to or not. I'm sure like even if he did take it seriously and like was considering it or whatever, just through his personality, he would probably be like, you know, he's not going to give you like a straight professional thing. You know, he's going to be Bill Murray. Yeah. He's going to make everyone's life difficult.
Well, and I mean, that made sense too, that back then it was at a point with the studio where, even if he would have signed off, they wanted him in the movie. So they were saying, you know, we're not going to greenlight the movie unless Bill Murray actually signs a contract. We don't want this promise that he's going to show up. Like, we want to know. A super funny quote there that I loved was Murray saying, you know, way back then, like, oh, but if I do this, then they're just going to want Ghostbusters 4, and I'm not doing that.
Well, he is,
and now he is.
Yep.
Yeah. It's so funny to me that his whole relationship with Ghostbusters and how it's just evolved through the years and going into Afterlife and now going into Ghostbusters 4. But like you said, Dan, he's like, yeah, they're gonna want to do Ghostbusters 4, and I don't want to do that. And now look at him. You know, so to look back on it now, it's all funny to me.
It almost seems like he has a love-hate relationship with Ghostbusters.
Oh, I think he very much does.
Yeah.
Well, it makes you wonder, because his character in Answer the Call almost feels like it was like his personal choice. You know, I want to play the skeptic. I want to say, you know, they're full of crap. In his own personal way, maybe he was sticking it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why are you pretending?
Because
And he was technically killed in a Ghostbusters movie.
Yep.
Yep.
Good point.
Who threw him out the window?
In the extended cut, I think he lives.
Actually, in the companion book, Dave, in the companion book, it's revealed like he does the forward. Like that character does the forward. And
oh, really? Lives,
and he lives through it all.
Okay.
So, James, in your research, we'll make it clear, people should not reach out to you for scripts. You don't have scripts to hand off to people.
Oh, no, I love
this last time.
I love getting those requests. Please.
But did you get to read anything from Sibnitsky and Eisenberg or the Ethan Coen one?
I didn't. I did not. You know, I contacted Sibnitsky and his partner Eisenberg. They were very polite. They were like, "We don't really want to be interviewed for this." You know, they were nice. I never.
You don't want our names on this.
I never got a hold of Ethan Coen, and those scripts just aren't like circulating at all anywhere, as far as I know. However, there is like a fake Ghostbusters 3 script that was like put on the internet around the same time that a lot of people believe is one of those scripts, and like,
okay,
the person who wrote it came out pretty quickly and said, no, this is all fiction, I made this up. But I interviewed so many people who were like, oh yeah, I've got that I've got that Ian Cohen script right here. And they sent it to me, and it was the fake one. That happened, yeah, like, multiple times. And I'm like, no, okay, this isn't real. This isn't the real one.
I was going to say, I vaguely remember reading what I was pretty sure ended up being a fake Alive Again script.
Yeah.
And so it must have been that one, I'm sure.
Dan, what do you talk about? We have it right here.
No. Yes. Oh, right behind me.
reading this was the first time I actually saw the Alive Again title, or maybe I've just forgotten it, but there's just so much with this that brought back so many memories. For example, the Channing Tatum, Chris Pratt, mm-hmm, Ghostbusters movie.
I still would have loved to have seen that.
I would have too.
And especially being directed by the Russo brothers, like, mm-hmm, obviously they've done so many fantastic hits recently.
Canon with the 84 Ghostbusters.
Yeah, well, because there was that, and then there was, are they going to world build with After the Call and all that back and forth. It really seems like that was a very disorganized mess. You know, Feig seemed like he knew what he wanted to do all along. To be perfectly fair to him, he turned Ghostbusters 3 down several times. He didn't want to do the sequel. He wanted to do his reboot, which, you know, that argument's been done to death. We don't need to resurface that. But, you know, respect to him. He wanted to do a reboot. Like, yeah. I don't agree with a reboot, but that's what he wanted to do. And, you know, Paul Feig he's good in my book. He helped us out when we were first starting out with a big donation. Mm-hmm. Honestly, he would always be good in my book solely for creating Freaks and Geeks. Like that show is phenomenal. If anyone has not watched that show, you need to make it a priority. It is amazing. It's where, like, Seth Rogen and James Franco and Jason Segel all kind of really, it was their first big thing that they all did. Linda Cardellini's great in it, and obviously Dan wanted her as a Ghostbuster at some point, or Bill mentioned her. I remember reading her name. So, I mean, yeah, but seeing all those different directors and the Channing Tatum thing, I love how he really is such a bro in real life. Like, that his email is, like, all caps, like, come on, with, like, 12 N's at the end of come on. I'm like, this is how you email a studio?
Well, don't forget his role in This Is the End.
Oh, God, no, let's forget that one. But, you know, all the different directors that were talked about, mm-hmm, Lord and Miller, I think, could have done something really cool. You know, the guys who did 21 Jump Street and the Lego movie. They really, you know, were kind of the it guys, it directors at the moment. And it sort of said they passed on it because they could really get any project they wanted. So they really had everything, sort of every studio kind of banging down their doors, begging them for their availability. But Eric, you and I had a funny conversation about Paul Feig last week, because Eric did not know that Paul Feig was in Heavyweights until reading
I also did not.
One of my favorite movies, seen it a thousand times either. And I went to go watch it again, I go, damn it.
But even more so, a movie that Eric and I both share that we absolutely love is That Thing You Do. And so as we're having this conversation where it's like, oh yeah, she was on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, she was on this, she was on that, or he was on this, sorry.
Googling the whole time that he's talking about this.
And I'm like, dude, he's in That Thing You Do. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, he's one of the DJs, the Purple Windbreaker guy. And he's like, I'll be right back.
and he's doing that classic kind of DJ voice from back then too.
Yep. Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, obviously, like, other names that were offered to director were talked about. Todd Phillips, I don't know if he would have had the right, even though he sort of, like, I guess in sort of this Frat Pack stuff, you could call him almost the de facto Reitman, where he's directing these guys in, like, old school. I liked the whole, can you sue yourself? Where, like, Reitman was involved in producing that, and, you know, all the Animal House. Brad Bird, he's one that I would have loved to have seen what he would do with Ghostbusters, because he's great in with the Mission Impossible stuff. And, obviously The Incredibles was fantastic.
So. Iron Giant.
Don't know that the South Park guys or that Seth MacFarlane, I don't know that they would have been the right approach.
I would like to see Seth MacFarlane as a Ghostbuster.
Okay.
Not as, you know, directing Ghostbusters or writing Ghostbusters.
Let's get it straight. Seth MacFarlane himself as a Ghostbuster, not Seth MacFarlane voicing Peter Griffin as a Ghostbuster. We've seen that.
So we already got that.
So, like, Denny Villeneuve, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He was also mentioned. Seeing Dune and Prisoners and a couple of those other movies, and he's mentioned as a Ghostbusters director. I'm like, how does this guy do comedy? I've never seen him do a single comedy at all. So
it's not to say that he's not capable of doing it, but definitely right. I'm
legitimately interested to see how he would do in that comedy realm. Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of like you go back to 89 Batman, Michael Keaton, Mr. Mom as Batman. You know, it's not to say, and he was fantastic, but you know, yeah, it's kind of like, well, can this person do this? All we've seen is like these epic or these action movies. Can this person do something that's a bit of a fantasy comedy? You know?
Yeah.
Well, you take Todd Phillips. He did the Hangover movies, and then he did Joker.
I think if you look at Todd Phillips' career, you can kind of see him you can see hints of him moving to stuff like Joker. Like, I feel like the Hangover movies have more kind of a darker bend, I think. And, you know, of course he directed that documentary about Gigi Allen, which was like being a punk rock guy myself and watching that and being like, seeing him make like Will Ferrell comedies. So it's like, this is pretty wild. But yeah, if he had directed Ghostbusters 3, that would have been that's definitely one where I was like, all right, I'll check that out for sure. I mean, I'm gonna obviously watch any Ghostbusters movie that comes out, but that would be exciting. There are a lot of the people mentioned in there, even people as left field or like maybe like not the right tone as like the South Park guys. It's like, I mean, come on, that would still be something to see, I think.
Oh, no doubt, because they are hilarious. I mean, it's just a different style and everything.
I mean, I would say Trey Parker, Matt Stone, they're kind of more, I want to say, akin to the Zuckerbergs who did like Airplane and the Naked Gun stuff. I mean, I think they're more akin to that, and I think that would be a little bit too
more slapstick comedy.
Yeah.
Did you, James, did you try to reach out to the South Park guys about that?
I think so. I don't remember specifically because it's like, there were so many, you know, names and all those,
to go down a rabbit hole for each one.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, I would have to double check to be sure. I remember, I definitely reached out to all the people who were supposed to be involved in Alive Again and the Eisenberg Stucinski script. Anne Hathaway emailed me back very quickly and was like, I do not want to be interviewed for this, but thank you for asking.
Anne Hathaway or somebody from her office?
I am choosing to believe it was Anne Hathaway.
Congratulations. I would too.
But yeah, I mean, I'd have to double check. I'm sure I have no reason not to believe that I did, you know, I'm sure I tried to reach out to all those people. You know, too. I definitely contacted Lord Miller and they were, like instantly like, no, we don't want to talk about that. So.
Well, for a bunch of them, I mean, especially like Stupnitsky and Eisenberg, I'm sure it's probably a pretty frustrating thing. You know, they said they worked on that for 4 years and then nothing ever happened with it. I'm sure that had to be a frustrating situation. And who knows if there's NDAs in place or anything like that. But, you know, I'm sure even if there weren't, that they may not want to talk about it. I get that.
Yeah.
James, how much of the Sony email leaks that came out? How much did you read through, if any at all?
I read through every email that mentioned Ghostbusters. I spent a lot of time reading them.
How many emails would you say? Just an estimate.
500 easily.
Wow.
Wow. they really wanted this to be a thing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And also at the same time, you see how like there was a lot of like it was Ghostbusters was important to them, but not as important as Spider-Man or some of their other properties.
Oh yeah.
So they were like, there was a little, you get some of that and seeing them go back and forth about it, you know, because it's like, oh, they were going to do a Barbie movie back then. They're like, we're putting all our chips into this Barbie movie.
I doubt that would succeed.
Yeah. I prefer more. Don't make a Barbie movie. That won't make any money.
No.
And they definitely had, there was definitely frustration where it was like, you know, they had frustration with what is Ivan Reitman, what does he feel he's entitled to do versus what we want him to do. Right. And like dealing with the rights issues between all the actors. You know, everyone's got to say okay to this.
Which was eventually resolved. They sold the rights back to the studio as part of moving into 2016, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So we don't have that going on anymore, thankfully. it was interesting sort of reading how it was unfortunate that everybody wasn't on the same page with how they wanted it presented. You know, Reitman wanted it to not be referred to as a reboot, press releases and stuff. And that even, I remember it bothering people when the first trailer came out. So, you know, 30 years ago, Four Scientists Save New York. So people thought it was going to be referencing and in canon with the old movie. And it was a bit discombobulated, unfortunately, which it was really interesting to see that Beeg wanted it to be a reboot all along. He was never confused. That's what he wanted to do. And I'm sure it was frustrating dealing with, you know, oh, well, we're not going to call it a reboot, but it might be a reboot. But we're not sure. I think that's probably hurt the overall production in the long run.
And with 2016 coming out was the creation of Ghost Corps.
Right. Yeah. I liked reading just that line was funny to me. Newly formed Ghost Corps. I was like, oh, right. Remember when that was newly formed?
Which was awesome, too. I mean, the certificate thing, the sending in, you a pin, all that good stuff. The Ivan Reitman signatures.
For sure.
It was Ivan, right, that signed.
Anne Hathaway signed all this.
Anne Hathaway.
Probably.
But then sort of furthering into that and what I was just talking about is, though, the Tatum Pratt Russell Brothers thing again, the timing was bad because, you know, they were sort of saying, oh, that might not be a reboot, but it might be a reboot. And so then Answer the Call was a reboot, and this was connected to the original, which just fed into the nonsense like, oh, this is the male response to the female movie, and this is to keep the bad reaction people happy and all that. It was just bad timing for that one to end up being discussed, I think. Because I think if that were discussed maybe, you know, not until after Answer the Call came out, it might have been a little bit different. If the production had gone through and then that, you know, that movie had done how it did financially, then maybe it would have been a bit different. But yeah, it kind of got its own, oh, this is the male response thing. When according to some of the facts there, it wasn't a male response movie. There was going to be females on that team and all of that.
Well, it was just like, it was sort of like, how can we make this into like a Marvel multiverse, you know?
Which I'm like, sure Dan Aykroyd loved.
That was another thing. And like, you see, there was some conversation in those leaked emails where it's like, how do we compete with Star Wars? How do we compete with Marvel? How do we compete with Harry Potter? And one response was like, you can't compete with that stuff.
Yeah, you don't. Can't. Mm-hmm.
It's too like, big. Just like,
we all love Ghostbusters, but yeah, it's not that big. It's not on that level.
You can't worry about going up against Star Wars or Harry Potter. Like,
right.
And at that time, Marvel is really starting to emerge.
right,
as this like unstoppable locomotive. And it's like, you can't worry about that. What else is going on? It's going to like just ruin us. We're going to be chasing our tail.
Definitely. If we'd gotten the Channing Tatum movie with some of the other mentions in the leaks, like the 21 Jump Street Men in Black crossover, there's totally a chance we could have gotten a multiverse where the Men in Black, the Ghostbusters, 21 Jump Street all merged.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
The Ghostbusters on 21 Jump Street.
Was anybody else surprised? I don't know. Maybe it was just me. That Jennifer Lawrence was even remotely interested.
First I ever heard of that. I was like, okay, cool. I could see her as a Ghostbuster.
And I don't mean that in any kind of offensive way. I just think it was really interesting because she was already in two big franchises at the time.
I hear she likes money.
But then like her career would just be X-Men movie, Hunger Games movie, Ghostbusters movie, X-Men movie, Hunger Games movie. Like it would have packed her schedule. And she would have been interested in another friend.
The book had said is she was all lined up, but her scheduling with X-Men wouldn't allow her to film.
Right.
Which I would have loved her to have seen her on that team.
Oh, for sure.
But who she would have been cast as? That's.
Yeah.
It was funny.
They were just trying to get anybody.
Kelly Spengler? No.
I did think that was kind of cool that Feig talked about, despite talking to all these different women prior to writing, that then they didn't end up writing for any specific voice. They did just write those characters. So that is interesting. And I'm sure plenty of improv and everything came into play as well once they were on set.
I remember seeing the cast list for when it was, the first actual trailer came out and we saw all of them. I knew I had no idea who Kate McKinnon was or Leslie Jones. Zero.
Well, because you, like most of the country, don't watch SNL anymore.
Not anymore. No. And McKinnon ended up being one of my favorite parts of the whole movie.
She was a breakout character.
Yeah.
And Kevin. Still, even with all the Marvel stuff and everything, they still got Helmsworth as well.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a bit shorter of a couple chapters this week. Anybody have a few more notes, or are we almost about wrapped up?
Well, I think we would. I think we would. We should kind of talk about the one thing that happened in one of the chapters was Harold Ramis's death.
Ah, very good. Harold, yep.
Harold Ramis, that's pretty big in all of this. I remember exactly the day that I heard the news, and I remember I just wept. I didn't even know this guy like personally, but I felt like I knew him. And I remember driving to a convenience store, getting a pack of Twinkies and saying, "This one's for you, Harold." But
I mean, yeah, I think a lot of us can agree with that, because I mean, for me, when I thought of it, was I wasn't just thinking, "Oh, Egon's gone." I was thinking, "Okay, this is the guy that's directed so many movies, written so much." Like growing, I mean, I was born in 78, so I was that ripe age for all of his movies, and just like, Groundhog Day, Stripes. I mean, when I think Harold Ramis, yeah, I think Ghostbusters, but I also think of, him and Bill in Stripes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, how many movies can you really think of Harold Ramis having, one of the lead parts? There's not many. But
And what a great quote from Obama too. I don't think I ever saw that quote, to be honest. Harold's passing. That was just really touching. It was a very nice tribute that he put together there.
A presidential tribute. I mean, for a Ghostbuster,
him the Bill Murray fashion, showing up to his house at 7 a.m. with the police escort to go see him while he was sick.
Yeah. So I went to college. So I got a story right around the time he died. So I was in design school, still downtown, and I saw this flyer for Harold doing a comedy lecture at Columbia. And I was probably, I don't know, 10 blocks away, 12 blocks away. But I was working, you know, three jobs at the time. These classes were at night, all that stuff. And I told myself, yeah, maybe if he goes again, if he comes back again, I'll go see him. And then shortly afterwards, it was almost that week beforehand. Almost it was. I couldn't believe it that I had just missed the opportunity to see him. And, you know, like everybody, his death, you know, struck a chord for sure. I mean, heck, I had people that I hadn't talked to in 9 years call me up. Hey, did you hear about Harold Ramis? You okay? I'm okay. Thank you for checking in.
And I did think it was a bit sad reading how Harold's wife chose to keep it private. And obviously those are family decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not here to criticize that, but I do wish that there could have been that outpouring of love and support for him while he was dealing with such a terrible disease.
It seems to be a common thing with Hollywood actors. Because I mean, we just lost Paul Rubin, Norm Macdonald, though he never announced his bad struggles with cancer. Same with Paul Rubin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think back to the Afterlife premiere when Violet Ramis was actually in the theater with us.
Yeah.
Of course she had probably seen the movie beforehand and all of that, but could imagine what was going through her head, especially that, you know, that end scene and the, you know, oh, opening God, scene. I mean, I was bawling like a baby.
Oh, I still get teared up watching that.
I still
that.
Do, man. It still hits me. I watched it the other day and it still hits. Cause I mean, they did such a great job of making him look, you know, he didn't look like overly CGI like we see in a lot of movies nowadays. I mean, they made him look, they did a great job. I know, you know, towards the end, you know, he put on a few pounds like a lot of us do, but they kind of respected the Egon aesthetic to him. And I think, I mean, I think if anyone else was making that movie, if it wasn't Jason and it wasn't Gil, I don't think that anyone else would have done it justice.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, obviously Jason was a kid. He grew up with them.
Yeah. He was around them all the time.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if he was Uncle Harold, you know, it's, but I mean, they definitely did an amazing job and there's nothing more you can really say.
Yeah.
We had a person on our live stream ask what book. It was Keelan Gillian. And I'm only assuming that because we were talking about the Answer the Call companion book. It's this one right here.
Okay.
Martin Heist.
There you go.
Yeah, this is the companion book. It's very funny. I've only read it one time. But there's a foreword by the character Martin Heiss in there. So
Bill Murray's character.
And he talks about dying or like almost dying by the hands of a ghost. So, yeah. You know, that's the book. This is the book that
Keelan.
I would read that one.
I have this book for years. I haven't read it.
Is that the next one we're all going to review?
Yeah. Next book club, Ghosts from Our Past.
I would also highly recommend A Convenient Parallel Dimension, the story of the Ghostbusters.
But so I did love the quote at the end of chapter 10. I thought it was just really interesting. If you sort of even take a moment and delve into what it must have been like to be Ivan Reitman with all of this going on, but him saying, "I hope strangely that Answer the Call isn't as good as the original, and I strangely hope that it is." Because, like, obviously he doesn't want it to be better than his movie, but he is a producer on it, and he's, you know, a head of Ghost Corps. Obviously he wants it to be good for that reason. But I just really respect the candor there and how conflicted he must have been in that situation, for sure.
He wants it to be good, but not too good.
Yeah.
The Goldilocks, just right.
Yeah. I like my Ghostbusters like I like my porridge.
Oh. So with that, we only have two chapters remaining. So we will be back next week to discuss chapters 11 and 12. But we got a couple giveaways that we got to talk about. Eric, Moogly Club, go ahead and tell them about yours first.
Yes, sir. So like Dan said, we have a giveaway going on right now. So in Chicago, we have a team called the Schaumburg Boomers right outside Chicago. And they had a marshmallow fight night. And that's exactly what you think it is. Camp sponsored by Campfire Marshmallows. So literally people would come, toss marshmallows out in the field after the game. It was a lot of fun. But the giveaway to that event was a very, in my opinion, a unique thing. It was a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man bobblehead. And let me grab it real quick so everybody sees it. Hold on.
Yeah, these are really cool. I know he's got a whole bunch of people already entering, so you're going to want to enter this if you're
you guys listening. Go ahead and take a look at the top of the screen. You'll see his the movie
yep, club they're page up there. Right there. Oh, I wouldn't have run away. Thanks. I'm out of breath now. No. So we're actually just – they were the Boomers were nice enough to donate two of them to me, and these guys were gone immediately. I was one of the first 100 people into the stadium, and 15 minutes later, they were gone. So these were limited edition to 1,000. All you have to do is follow the instructions on the post. You go to the Moogly Fan Club on Facebook.com. Just like the post, share the post, comment below. Easy stuff, all free. And on August 26th, we will announce the winners.
Awesome.
Two bobbleheads, limited edition. And I have to point out how awesome it is to have a bobblehead, a Stay Puft bobblehead, sponsored by Campfire Marshmallows.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, it makes perfect sense. But when you think about what happened with Afterlife and all of that.
With their replica marshmallows.
To have the logo next to this. I mean, I don't think you'll see something like that again in a long time. So hopefully everybody, you know, can go to the page. Have a lot of fun. We already have, 70 people.
Nice. Trying
for it, so your chances are still good.
Very good.
Yeah.
And then the other giveaway will be here next week. We have not yet figured out all the details, so we'll be releasing that this week, so pay attention. But if you have been following along and reading the book, that's great. But if you haven't and you want your own copy, both the Moogly Club and the Buffalo Ghostbusters, courtesy of James Green Jr., we will be giving away two autographed copies of his book during next week's stream.
Signed by him, not us.
Yes. That's actually a good clarification.
I don't know, James, do you want to pass it around to all of us? We'll all sign it?
No. Just signed by James. In
3 months.
Yeah, just signed by James. So that'll be a fun giveaway. We'll figure out exactly how we're going to do that, but make sure to join us next week so that you can participate in that. Thank you, everyone, for following along through the first 10 chapters. We have two more to go. Once again, thank you very much to James Green Jr. for joining us through all of this so far. Have a great night, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
So long.
See ya.